Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John. This week, we'll be talking about privacy issues. Apple made some announcements around its credit card and privacy across all of their new product lines. A New Jersey bill would broaden notifications for breaches, and there's a new California Privacy Act, which creates more rights for consumers and their data. Please hit subscribe to learn about this and the latest in FinTech news. All right, let's get started with our privacy episode. With me this week is our privacy expert, Monica.
Hey, John, and thanks for the title.
That's right. Well earned. And Steve is here with us.
Can I be the chief deputy privacy officer?
You are now the chief deputy privacy officer. All right. Well, Apple made a lot of announcements yesterday, I guess it was. What's new?
Yeah, so Apple made a number of announcements regarding a few different new offerings that they're providing. A couple of them are subscription services for, the newest version of Apple TV, which is a streaming product, and magazine subscriptions. We're not going to be talking about those today, but what I do want to talk about is that Apple has unveiled a new credit card. So it has the amazingly shocking name of Apple Card. And this is really a much bigger push into the world of your wallet than Apple Pay and Apple Wallet have been. So this is a physical card that's titanium, will only have your name on it. No signature will be on there. No credit card number will actually be on it. And what's unusual about it is it's actually going to be tied to your Apple Pay account. And in fact, in order to complete purchases, you'll need Face ID or Touch ID on an Apple device, as well as a one-time security code. So when I say all that, you're probably thinking, wow, that's quite a bit more secure than your typical credit card transaction. And you would be right. And at the same time, Apple's also built in some other interesting things there. They are partnering with Goldman Sachs to actually provide kind of the underlying banking and credit card technology for this. And Apple is trumpeting quite a bit about their focus on securing your privacy. So they've committed to no debt data sharing or selling any of your purchase or account information. They will be using machine learning on when you make purchases with Apple devices that will organize your spending behavior into both weekly and monthly summaries. So that's something where, you know, they're kind of leveraging machine learning for your benefit instead of, say, their benefit, of course.
And an important thing about the way they do it is that runs on your device. It doesn't send data out to a server to do it.
Yes, that's exactly it. So, you know, again, Apple has really thought through some of the ways that you can have your data and not necessarily have it be shopped all over the world of marketing and marketers.
Yeah, no, I was really surprised that there's no annual fee, no cash advances fees, no over-the-limit fees, no late fees.
Well, I think actually some of that has been maybe either overpromised by Apple or oversold by reporters. So the card itself does not have a fee. The interest rates appear to be pretty standard for the world of interest rates, you know, somewhere between kind of 13 and 24% APR. But Apple did acknowledge that if you don't pay your bills on time, that they do reserve the right to up your interest rate. So I wouldn't say that there's kind of like, hey, no penalty for anything. And, you know, that's fair. I mean, when you buy things on a credit card, you're buying it with somebody else's money until you pay it back. So I don't really get up in Apple's grill about wanting to charge someone a higher rate for not paying them back.
It's kind of the very Apple thing. The price is all bundled into, in this case, the interest rate.
I'm sure other banks that, you know, Apple leveraged their relationship for the last few years on Apple Pay, they're probably feeling like, oh, man. And there is something else here, especially if you are an Apple person, that you might find appealing. And that is that Apple will be providing basically a percentage of your purchases cash back to you. So it looks like it's going to be 3% back when you buy purchases from Apple itself, 2% when you use Apple Pay, and 1% when you're using the physical card. One thing that I thought was interesting here is this card is very squarely marketed to a connected world. Because if this credit card doesn't have any numbers printed anywhere on it, you know, if you go to some parts of the world where, oh, well, I'm actually not getting good cell service, or it's 30 years ago in that part of the world, and they use those kind of like physical machines with the carbon,
Is that still out there somewhere?
They are. I've actually used them occasionally. Even sometimes, like when you get a pizza delivered, they'll actually take the carbon paper and just kind of rub your card over it. And to be fair, lots of cards today don't actually have embossed embossed numbers on there. But just something to keep in mind. If you're going to travel in the developing world, I would bring a more traditional credit card to use.
Yeah. There's nothing on the card like that. That CVV code. Signature. Just a piece of metal, basically.
If I understand how this will work correctly, sort of, you know, what the customer journey will be for this is that you'll have all that card information stored locally on the device in the same part of the phone where you have your biometric information. And then if you want to make a purchase online through Safari or something, then it'll auto-populate that information so that you don't even have to know your credit card number to see it. So it'll be seamlessly integrated in that purchase. So that, you know, there's two models here. There's the card present model where you go to, say, Starbucks and you tap with your phone to pay. And then also if you want to do some e-commerce, it'll be well integrated into Safari so that you can, again, more seamlessly make that purchase. But I think that it's worth noting also that this is something that this also has a lot of implications for biometric security as well. Because banks have of course, for the longest time, been sort of exploring how they can use your fingerprint or, in some cases, your iris to authenticate you. But if they have both your location, they have your fingerprint, and now they also have your card on file, it'll make it really difficult for fraudsters to be able to use your card in any unauthorized way. So kind of an interesting way to use that. I have an Android for my personal use, but I have an iPhone for work. I wonder whether either of you will chomp at the bait to actually get this credit card. What do you think about it?
I don't know. You know, I guess they put together a lot of things that are in different pieces. I feel like I get the ease of use with online purchasing. I don't know that it solves any problem for me. I get a lot of points. I love my American Express card for that. And that is dollars, although they do show it as points. I think they make things very easy. Maybe it's a new up-and-comer designed, young people designed for how they use credit cards when you're just starting out. I already have so many services that do this for me in different ways, but I can see how this will influence other issuers. It's very easy to imagine people going to this where there's no number on the card, where there's... you know, as usual, they just skip all the legacy stuff and jump ahead, right? But I don't see it as especially compelling for solving a problem that I have, especially since Apple Pay can tie to an existing card and you can, do all the wireless payment things and, vendors that accept Apple Pay online, you're already doing that. So, I think I love the simplicity part of it, especially like the way they showed the statements. With how you make your payments and how you can kind of roll around that little ring so you can see how much interest you'll pay depending on the payment that you'll make. That's pretty cool. Like that transparency is very Apple, right? And giving you help with, if I pay 70, I don't know if you saw the demo, you just put your finger around this ring to adjust the payment. It says the interest and how long you'll pay and all that stuff. It's dynamic, and the whole thing is like that, right? It's more tailored with all these digital tools instead of like, you see a Citibank statement or somebody else, and online it'll be a PDF of a paper statement, right? It's still trapped in the old school, whereas Apple's like, we're just going to skip ahead and assume, we can use the compute power that's right in your hand.
I think also this is a nice segue into, or actually a question that I had on this is, Goldman Sachs acquired a company called Clarity Money, which is a PFM, a personal finance manager, about a year and a half ago or so. And they seem to have folded that into their new Marcus high yield savings account. But I was expecting more or deeper integration between Marcus and this Apple product. So I wonder whether, you know, for the next year, for the next big reveal will be that you can now do things like take out a small personal loan or open up a high yield savings account with your Apple device and your Apple credit card.
That sounds very much like model, doesn't it? They come out with the minimum viable product that's, you know, nice design, and then they start building up on top of it, right? That's so many products are that way. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all, right?
But I would be interested to see how far Apple wants to take integration with Goldman Sachs, because Apple's business model is all around keeping you in the ecosystem. And that actually is probably the reason that I won't get one of these. So I already have given Apple a ton of money over the years. I am an aluminum and titanium kind of gal, I guess you could say. And as someone who is really concerned about privacy, I don't really want Apple to know everything that I spend my money on and where I am at all times and the exact contours of my face. That said, I also love cash back, and I get 2% now on my old school boring credit card from an old school big boring bank. And that's probably all right for me, even though I do recognize that my data is getting hawked around all over the place. You know, I don't think Citibank is the only person doing that to me. That said, I think it's always nice to see any company kind of try and push things forward in terms of ease of use, transparency around your own information, and a real focus on where do we actually store this data? What is our business commitment with what we will do with this data? So I think that's all laudable. I'm not going to go beat down Apple's doors to get a card in the next few days, but I'll certainly see what the reception in the marketplace looks like.
Yeah, no, I do like the tools. You know, the breakdown of your spending, all that dynamic information is a big help.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious. Is Apple acting like a fintech that partners with a bank and then later gets its own banking license, like some of the other larger fintechs? Or do they say that's not our specialty and keep partnering for the long term?
I don't think it makes sense for Apple to become a bank. It's a lot of regulation that they, I'm sure, mm-hmm. could take on. And also, you know, we can basically see this as is it Superman 2 or 3, where they take a fraction of a penny from every transaction. This is basically a way for them to say, you know, we know that our users are really deep in the ecosystem. It's where they live. If we can get a cut of everything they pay for, you know, some small interchange fee, or on the flip side, if they can reduce the amount of money that they have to seed to the payment processors and the other players in that three-party system, they could actually come out ahead without actually needing to be a bank. So it makes more sense for them to make this as a way to increase revenue from non-traditional sources without actually becoming a bank.
And I do think that when you look at this, when you look at the App Store and iTunes, when you look at their new magazine subscription or their new news and magazine subscription service, Apple's good at being a middleman and good at taking a cut along the way.
They emphasized on all of those announcements privacy and data protection so much. And they mentioned it in their advertising for this card as well. What do you think, mm-hmm. Monica? I thought that was a swipe at Google and Facebook and all those problems. So they're taking they're high roading Facebook here.
Well, it's easy to high road when your business model doesn't require you to take the low road. Right? And Apple has in the past made the bulk of its money by selling hardware. When you're selling a physical product to your customer, you're selling their information to other people, just isn't as valuable to you. You don't need to do it the way Google and Facebook do. And I know I'm somewhat misrepresenting Google's business model there.
Overall,
I don't mean to, but
yeah.
I think listeners know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to be on the high road when you're naturally in the high road. And you'd be foolish not to trumpet that and, you know, slag your competitors when they fall short of your ideals. And it's not that Apple is some corporate angel. I don't mean it that way. But I think that they are well placed to take advantage of a renewed focus on privacy. And so
Well placed. Well placed is a good way to put it. Yeah.
Right.
You know, the first $1 trillion is the hard part.
The next $500 billion comes easy. This is all super new, but we will continue to follow it. And listeners, we'd love to see if you get a fancy titanium Apple Card. Send us a pic. So that's what's going on in the marketplace. I think Steve's got some stuff to tell us about what's going on in legislatures.
I do, yeah. So one of the key things that Apple, or one of the things that Apple keyed on during their keynote, is the fact that they wouldn't sell your data and use your credit card transaction information as a way to personalize ads to you, which I think is a big shot across the bow for both Facebook and Google. But on the other side of the spectrum, there's a lot of, there seems to be renewed interest from legislators into how we can rein in or increase, rather, privacy, both around financial transactions, but just in general with tech companies. So we're all aware of the California Consumer Privacy Act, CCPA, which is basically a GDPR-like bill for California that gives users the ability to control the data they can share. But there's also more stuff coming out of Jersey now. A bipartisan bill sent by legislators in New Jersey, sent to the governor, would broaden the requirements that companies have to abide by in case of a PII breach. So if you're now a resident of New Jersey and there's a breach that exposes, you know, not just your name and social, but now even your email address, your security questions, your username, and of course your password, companies are bound to notify you, which I think is a great step. I oftentimes rely on have I been pwned.
It sounds like a pretty low bar that maybe we should have nationally, right?
It's a very low bar, yeah, but I'm hoping that this is the wedge, you know, and that most states, again, do this kind of stuff, because it's so disparate now. I mean, I get emails from, you know, I got an email from LinkedIn a few months ago that my email was compromised, but they're few and far between. I think it may be, you know, I'm afraid that given the frequency of these things, we'll kind of become numb to them, but I still would like to know and place the onus on the companies to say, you know, this is the data that was exposed, and this is how we'll deal with it. So I don't typically say this, but go New Jersey.
Hey. born in New Jersey, right here. All good things come from there.
So my thinking on this is, first off, it's still kind of shocking to me that at the federal level, companies don't even have to alert citizens if personally identifiable information has been sent out. That is just kind of mind-blowing to me. So, yes, I absolutely am glad that states like California and New Jersey are at least trying to rectify what they can. At the same time, you know, I think the business community has a real point when they push back that there should be federal legislation that really provides a lot more consistency and standardization around what firms and entities need to do. So I haven't given up the dream that we will have some federal regulations around this piece, but I feel like that dream is still a long ways away. So I'm with Steve. Go New Jersey.
Yeah.
Go Jersey.
And now it's time for our final bite, where we take a look at a number and the interesting story behind it. And my final bite is 61. This is the number of cities in which mortgage lending discrimination has been classified as especially bad within the United States. And to help address that is a startup called Zest Finance, who tries to get people out of the mix to avoid discrimination by using artificial intelligence. They have a product called ZAML Fair, I guess XAML Fair. So they try to eliminate bias and discrimination in mortgage lending. And as we can see, it's been a big issue for African Americans and Latinos who are denied conventional mortgage rates when they have the same qualifications compared to their white neighbors, or in some cases, potential neighbors, because they can't get the mortgage loan.
Hey, I'm curious, John, how does this happen in light of all the efforts that we see the big banks undertake regarding greenlighting, sort of reversing the redlining policies? How do you actually discriminate against somebody based on their ethnicity or their race.
I'm not sure that we're necessarily going to have like super detailed information based on the last year or two, but I'm guessing that some of the same ills that are supposed to be rectified by greenlining aren't. Things like minority purchasers may not be given the same information about lots of the more niche programs that are designed to support homeowners. They may still be offered higher interest rates, not necessarily due to straight up discrimination, but because they may not already have some of the same levels of wealth, some of the same prior credit history that would allow you to get a better rate, even though you may not represent any more financial risk than another person.
Interesting. So the argument they have here on their side is that the algorithms or the models they use are, quote, inherently biased. So they're looking to basically create a new model through which companies can then license to reduce bias in lending.
Yeah, and what they say is that if this tool was applied across the country, it removes 70% of the mortgage approval gap between Hispanics and white borrowers, which would be 172,000 new mortgage approvals a year, and remove the gap by more than 40% for the difference between Black and white borrowers.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, yeah. So good luck to them, and hope this kind of effort goes on across the banking and lending industry.
Good stuff, John. Thank you. My final bite is a question mark. See what I'm doing there? So it was announced today that Spotify was going to acquire Parcast. So Spotify, as you may recall, has pledged to invest something like $500 million in podcasts. So they acquired Gimlet a few months ago, and now they acquired Parcast, which I love because they have a number of titles that really appeal to my dark sensibilities. I'm a big fan of the podcast Cults and Unsolved Murders and Conspiracy Theories and Serial Killers. And they have a very neat spot.
Oh, you might like another one called Conviction.
Conviction.
It sounds like up your alley. Yeah.
Jail sentence. Yeah. So they the terms of the deal were not disclosed, but I think that this is, again, kind of an interesting play by Spotify to become a more dominant player in audio entertainment and go beyond their Gimlet stuff. My only concern is, and I say this as a Spotify premium subscriber, is that I would hate for the awesome podcast in the Parcast network to be put behind the firewall of Spotify and for Spotify to become sort of a YouTube, which you have to use to get any podcast, basically. So I like the investment. I'm a podcaster. And I'd love to see more money going into the segment, but I'm a bit concerned that they are looking to basically corner the market by acquiring all these high-profile podcast producers.
Yeah, we are becoming a series of walled gardens, the same with video subscriptions. I mean, you're going to have to subscribe to 5 or 6 different things and maybe 2 or 3 podcast services. It's going to be messy. Maybe Apple will have a unified subscription announcement some years from now, too. To eliminate all that.
Well,
but I'm playing hardball.
Well, we don't know.
With offers for our podcast. I just turned down a few million dollars, but I'm sure they'll come around.
You should have consulted me.
Don't be so rude to Spotify, John. Yeah, I think that one of the things that I think a lot about is how long will it be and who will be the company that offers the 21st century of the cable bundle? Because there's just too many different places to subscribe to if you have somewhat of an omnivorous media diet.
Yeah. I guess what will happen is the consolidation, just like it's all the Comcast and Disney acquisitions, that they'll start to buy each other. One will show weakness, and that'll naturally get it down because people aren't going to subscribe to 10 different things like that.
If you are subscribing to 7 different $10 a month subscriptions, I mean, that's almost a cable bill. So anyway, I'll go with my final bite, and it's $7. And that's the amount that it's an amount that we know Venmo will consider sending you to a collections agency for.
Oh, good to know.
Pretty darn
650.
Small.
I'm good.
$7 to wreck your credit. The Wall Street Journal did an article this week around Venmo in an attempt to staunch some of its fraud and dispute-related losses, has really been cracking down on some people who may have had transactions go awry and then kind of reclaim the money. So Venmo is coming after you. They are a little less friendly than they were before. And one of the things that I thought was quite interesting here, and I would like to use as a reminder to our listeners who Venmo, is when pressed for comment by the Wall Street Journal, a spokesman from Venmo said that Venmo is designed for payments between friends and people who know and trust one another. And our user agreement states that the platform should not be used to accept payment from or send payment to another user for a good or service. So number one, if you're buying or selling to a stranger on Venmo, you are at pretty substantial risk for that amount of that transaction. And number two, I'm like, really? Venmo? That's your model? Just friends and family? Because it seems like that's a pretty niche place to be in the payment space.
Oh, shoot. Oh, I just tried to pay for a car with Venmo. Oh, well, I guess I shouldn't have done that. All right. That's it for this episode of the FinTech Newscast. Please hit subscribe to keep up with all the latest in FinTech news. Feel free to email us at info@fintechnewscast.com for any questions, comments, or to suggest an interesting topic. And thanks for listening.
See you later.
Join us next week. Bye-bye.